KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at KHUM.com.
We're now going to do Coastal Currents. It's a regular thing Wednesdays at noon. Beth is not with us today. She's in a research blimp. It is brought to you by Coca-Tat and Bayside Garden Supply. And joining us once again, good dude and National Weather Service hero, Troy Nicolini. Hey, Troy, how are you?
Good. How are you, Mike?
I'm well. Thanks for taking time. I know you guys are very busy today. What with the tsunami alert system, we have some questions from listeners. There are a lot of fail points that we want to talk about. We don't want to pull punches here. But let's start by explaining what the system is supposed to look like when it works. Can you take us through the signal path of today's test?
Yeah, certainly. From this office, for this test, and actually for a real event, would be pretty much identical. We send out a digital message across the radio waves, which is really nice because, of course, the radio waves pretty much reach everybody. And it sounds that it's the duck squawk that you might hear when the TV's interrupted. It kind of goes, eh. That's that digital message. And so that thing has a code that says a tsunami warning's been issued. And that message is really cool because it does a lot of things. It should interrupt TV and radio stations like KHUM and Channel 3 here locally. It also turns on people's personal NOAA weather radios that they have in their home, so they can be basically in the silent mode, and that signal will turn them on automatically. And then lastly, in this region throughout northwestern California, we designed our tsunami siren system to also be turned on by that same digitally encoded radio message. So it's a really pretty handy message. And so this test is really to make sure all that worked. We also, though, had Civil Air Patrol and reverse calling going out as part of a full sort of tsunami warning system test for today.
Now, did you blast that signal out from a transmitter atop Woodley Island, where the National Weather Service office is?
Yeah, we launch it here, and then it goes to repeaters all over northwestern California. So it goes from our office to Mount Pierce, pretty much behind you guys there. And from Mount Pierce, it propagates out all over Humboldt County. It also goes down to Point Arena transmitter, a Ukiah transmitter, and up into southern Oregon for a transmitter that hits Crescent City and Del Norte County.
What happened and did not happen today is still being sorted out. I called a couple of radio stations in the last hour to see who got what, and it seems like on the radio side, things were not so hot. The way that it's supposed to work here at KHUM, and we have been acing these things, we feel, for the last couple of years, and so to not really get the full bore thing, we were a little bummed. We're going to go home and cry, Troy. That's what's going to happen. We're going to go home and cry.
And Mike, you know, it might be on our end. We've had upgrades in our equipment. Others have had upgrades in their equipment and software and personnel changes. And that's actually exactly why we test this every year. Well, you know, it's important for this community, this region, to be proud about the fact that nowhere else in the country does this as if it's a real tsunami. It's very risky because people can be confused. But we think the benefits outweigh the possible risks because we can make sure the whole thing works properly. So now, you know, I'll work with your engineer to see if it was our signal that was flawed or there's something about your equipment, for example. But we'll get it sorted out before the next real tsunami. So for me, it's always like a totally positive thing. And then the other take-home is that we test like five or six systems, just like we would use in a real tsunami. We don't expect all seven to always work for every tsunami or every test. We have redundancy to make sure that at least one or two reaches every single man, woman, and child in Humboldt County. So it's all about redundancy and finding the problems and fixing them and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And in fairness, the other stations that I spoke with today also did not activate, which is truly scary.
Yeah, and we have a redundancy where people can pick up the signal from us or a certain select handful of stations that have the signal available also. And so we don't know if it was us or one of those primary stations, and we'll figure that out and fix it.
Well, what's also a little scary is that there are radio stations and TV stations, we're supposed to pick up these signals, as you said, Weather Service triggers them, then they go up to a repeater, then they come back down, and then they spread out. There's triple redundancy. There's the Weather Service signal.
Yep.
There's the local commercial radio station that sort of acts as the distributor for the market. And then there's a backup called an LP2, and the backup that's like KZPN. Like, the LP2 doesn't even exist right now.
Right. It used to be Bayside Radio, and once they became Jefferson, we lost that, and so we're looking to recruit another radio station to be the LP2 to have a triple redundancy. I will point out one thing we don't really do for this test that we would do in a real tsunami is the manual activations. We like to be able to have radio stations automatically carry this message from the Weather Service, but in a real tsunami, we would call radio stations and make sure they got it, make sure it worked, and if it didn't, we would encourage them to do a manual activation where you can sit there right there at your terminal and flip flip it on and interrupt the program and tell people there's a tsunami warning, for example.
Right. Well, and KHUM is an exception to this, but in general, there are not a lot of live people.
Right, and especially at 2 o'clock in the morning, and that's a great question, Mike, and a great point, because if it doesn't work in the automatic mode, you need a live body. And so we're working, I think I actually have your backdoor number. We've got this sort of informal protocol in Humboldt County where we can call radio stations at home, not the radio stations,
right,
but
right.
The individuals, like, hey, Mike, it's 2 in the morning. Listen, this is Troy. You got to get up and go to the station, if you know, because I know you're willing to do that. And KHUM has been really progressive about, you know, obviously staffing your station at all hours of the day when the community needs you. So
I would say we are aggressive about that. Like, that's our thing.
That's your stance, totally.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
Okay, so now on the radio side, things could clearly have gone better for radio stations in this area. Down in Fort Bragg, though, we got calls because our signal comes in down there. I guess things went pretty smoothly in Fort Bragg?
The Coast, which is the primary radio station down there, carried it flawlessly. KUKI, which is in the interior, had some problems that didn't go through, and so, you know, we'll look at those hardware issues. But and honestly, our signal seemed a little odd going out. We usually have the ending tones that end it, and for some reason they didn't go out. So just to make sure, you know, it could be on our end, and we're gonna go look at that really hard.
Well, tell us where the sirens are around the Humboldt Bay area, for instance.
Yeah, we've got about 11 sirens. So starting north, there's one in Oreck, and then there's one in Big Lagoon, Trinidad, Moonstone Beach, Clam Beach, and then coming into the Bay Area, the first one would be essentially Samoa, and here at the weather office, which is not for the weather office, obviously, but to serve the Humboldt Bay region, and then Samoa, Fairhaven, and King Salmon and Fields Landing. And we don't have all the reports in yet, but we do know that, well, we definitely know the one here on Woodley Island went because we could hear it. We know that Manila Beach did, the Manila siren did not go off, nor did the Oreck siren. Shelter Cove, there's another one, and that one went off successfully. So,
you're saying Shelter Cove did go off?
Yes.
Great.
And again, those are all triggered by the same signal that should have interrupted TV and radio stations. And we're gonna go look and see why the ones that didn't work actually didn't work. And again, in a real tsunami, we would send people out there to manually turn them on. And in some cases, we did that here for this test as well.
I want to ask you about the plane. I mean, I got a lot of questions. With Troy Nicolini from the National Weather Service about the ups and downs of today's tsunami test. By the way, these updated tsunami maps, speaking of Shelter Cove, they put the airport and the airstrip in Shelter Cove. That's in the tsunami zone, even though it's on that cliff?
Yeah, it's so close to the water's edge, and that was a judgment call that it was decided that the waves could... It's weird. They think of tsunami sort of inundating, but there's also the wave part where it can splash up. And so it was felt that you'd want to be farther back from that cliff edge just because it's right there at the coast and that a lot of wave energy could kind of run up on the cliff and splash up into that zone.
Yeah, I guess that does make sense when you put it like that.
And that also applies, by the way, more locally for McKinleyville. Technically, all of McKinleyville homes up there on the terrace and the bluff are all out of the tsunami zone, but and we even kept the map that way for McKinleyville. But if you lived in a house right on the cliff there and there was a big tsunami coming, you know, I'd probably suggest going inland a little bit anyway.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. And now, if people have questions about whether or not they pass through a tsunami zone on their way to work or that sort of thing, I would divert your attention to the Lost Coast Outpost, where there are new updated tsunami maps, which brings up an interesting point. Troy, over the years, you have maintained that the Woodley Island weather station, not in a tsunami zone. You've always said, it's 2 miles back. It's 20 feet up.
Yep.
New maps, not so much.
No. The new maps are online. It's not entirely clear, but the really high resolution ones, we still, the very middle of this island, we're safe from pretty much any tsunami and any geologic
record. You're not giving up the ghost, are you?
No, I'm serious. We're safe. Now, you know, we might get ankle-deep water, but we certainly won't get overrun by a huge tsunami, you know, full of debris pouring over the building, that kind of thing.
In your hurricane-proof building, no less.
Yeah, it's built for hurricanes and tornadoes, yeah.
That's a fun fact. So let's talk about some stuff that worked pretty well. It looks like the reverse 911 system went off pretty well.
Yeah, actually, I haven't heard feedback except for looking at some blogs on online. We got calls here. We're looking at blogs, and so far we've had mostly positive. There is a lot of folks on the blogosphere saying, I never heard a thing. I live in McKinleyville, or I live in Cutton. And so, Mike, if you don't mind, I'd like to take a moment to point out that if you're in McKinleyville, in the heart of McKinleyville, you're totally safe from tsunamis, and we don't have any sirens for you. You should have heard it on a radio station, but you would not expect sirens or airplanes or really anything. You wouldn't get a reverse call. Tsunamis are really limited to just pretty close to the coast around here, with the exception of river valleys where they can propagate pretty far inland.
So the planes that scrambled, tell us about those.
Civil Air Patrol, we would use those in a real event, and there are some areas where they're really useful. So, for example, if you were camping on the Lost Coast, you know, you're not going to get radio reception, you're not going to get no-weather radio, and so the airplanes are particularly valuable to hit people who are on remote parts of our coast recreating. And that's really one of the key things, and thanks for bringing up the Civil Air Patrol, because this redundancy, it's also some systems work better for some things versus others. And so, for example, the sirens, we wouldn't expect people to hear inside their house, say, in downtown Eureka. The sirens are really for folks who are outside on the water's edge, and we mostly use them only in areas where we expect a lot of people to be outside. So like downtown Eureka, the ones that we have in the beach areas like Trinidad, a lot of recreation there on the coast. But we can't put them on every single beach everywhere where there's really low populations, and that's where the Civil Air Patrol planes are really useful. And for this test, they actually flew the entire Lost Coast, and they may not have seen a single soul, but that's a dry run for the real scenario where we'd want to make sure folks who might be out there surfing or camping would know about the tsunami.
The name suggests, are those civilian volunteers?
Yes. Yep. It's supported by the Air Force. It's a great program. It's been around forever. And, they're really serious guys. It's really fun to work with them, and they take this stuff really serious. By the way, this has only become feasible recently because the technology for public address systems on airplanes has evolved. 10 years ago, we would never consider using an airplane because the voices were impossible to hear. They were very garbled and hard to hear. But for your listeners who heard these Civil Air Patrol broadcasts, I think they'll tell you that they were very clear. It's like the person's almost standing next to you. So it's great new technology.
It is. Although I did get some callers here in the station who were saying like they had no idea what the planes were saying. They knew it was part of the test, but they didn't, you know, it was unintelligible to them.
Yeah, if you're far enough away, then it's really hard to hear what they're saying.
Yep. But again, on the upside, when you talk about these redundancies, you know, people who are in the zones, if the sirens went off for the most part, that's good. If the planes went all the way up and down the coast, that's good. You know, radio and TV, all these systems working in concert,
yep.
You're gonna know.
Yeah, now, and go ahead.
Oh, well, okay, so a listener had a question about parts of Eureka that are in the supposed inundation zone, but could not hear the sirens. These are parts in Old Town and
That's an amazing question because we've really looked hard at that. And those waterfront areas like Arcata, too, have some coastal areas. Our belief is that those communities have a lot of fire department resource and law enforcement resource. So, like, Eureka has their own city police department. So they would be doing door-to-door notification in a real tsunami. And, in fact, they did that last March during our real event. And we've done some drills like that. I think 2 years ago, Trinidad had their fire department and law enforcement going door to door as if it was a real tsunami during the test. So that's a great question. And those really, right along, the problem with those areas is they have a fringe that's exposed, and then they have a lot of population that's not. So if we put a siren every half mile along the Eureka waterfront, we would blitz all of Eureka and Cutton and Henderson Center with siren noise, where 98% of the people receiving that noise would be totally safe. So instead, it's really better to do targeted notification right along the water's edge with law enforcement and firefighters. And that's what we would do for a real event.
Now, there is obviously some work to be done to tighten up these systems. But again, as you said, we are one of the few areas in the country that takes this thing with, I think, the seriousness that it demands. I mean, we're going to see a wave. We're, you know, it's just a matter of when we're going to get a 9-point earthquake, which is why we're spending so much time talking about this. You are soliciting feedback at the National Weather Service. I'm seeing this on your Facebook page.
Yep.
The stuff that we have talked about, oh, the sirens were unintelligible, oh, you know, it didn't work on this radio, or oh, my weather service radio didn't trigger, or whatever the case may be, you're taking any and all feedback?
Absolutely, and this area is known for its innovation and creativity, so also if folks have ideas they want to share about how to make the whole system better, this is not the weather service's system, it's not the radio and TV stations, it's the community's tsunami warning system, so we're all ears. We love to hear ideas, and honestly, we've gotten some great ideas from the community that we've put in place and used over the years, so you know, everybody working together.
Now, as you and I have discussed, sort of, you know, personally, like, you and I both live in a tsunami zone. You live in Fairhaven.
Thanks for bringing that up, Mike.
Well, yeah, I know. It's just like, I live in fear, and I can scramble to a hill. Like, I'm close to safe ground. For a person who lives in Fairhaven, are you not paralyzed by fear as you lay down to sleep every night?
Well, you know, we've got an informal evacuation site, and we're working with the private landowner to make it formal and get stairs and conduct drills, and it's a really good question, Mike. I thought about moving, but then, you know, frankly, I would be sort of abandoning the community. So instead, I'm committed to working on a solution for the entire community. And it's weird. Like, it is a weird fear, but it also allows me to really, I think, be way more aggressive about tsunami issues in this region. So it kind of helps me do my job and protect the whole community by actually being sort of a customer, like, you know.
You're walking the talk in the realest sense.
I definitely, sometimes at conferences, people are like, man, dude, you take this really personal. It's like, yeah, no kidding.
Before we wrap this up, again, it's Troy Nicolini from the National Weather Service on Coastal Currents today. There have been some meetings with local, you know, communications committees and that sort of thing about, like, what is really going to happen when this massive event occurs. And one of the things that was put on the table is that we've had these tsunamis, we've actually had real-life measurable tsunamis occur in the Humboldt Bay area over the last decade or so. And one of the things that you mentioned is that people are not taking them quite as seriously, maybe because the last one that we had hit at low tide. Could you talk about what would have happened if that tsunami last year arrived at a high tide?
Yeah, and it's just a matter of a few hours difference in timing. We could have had... It would have inundated certainly like a lot of areas in Humboldt County and Delmar County. Probably would have destroyed a lot of homes in Crescent City. It would have destroyed docks and waterfront infrastructure here in Humboldt County. And probably King Salmon, most of the houses in King Salmon would have been inundated by it. So it's amazing how much we dodged a bullet. And my greater concern, not just that we get that same event at high tide, is that we've had all these events where the tsunami comes from far away. And so we're kind of conditioned to think, oh, yeah, we've got X number of hours and it's not going to be that high. But if we have a big earthquake tomorrow right off our coast, two critical differences. It'll get here in 10 minutes, and that's the wave we're really worried about. So I want to make sure everybody knows we're testing the official warning system. We've had events that for which the official warning system works really well. But the natural warning, which is the big earthquake, you need to know 10 minutes, go to high ground right now. Forget about possessions. You got 10 minutes to get to high ground. Don't wait for sirens. Don't wait for Mike on KHAM to let you know, or Troy at the Weather Service. You've got to make that connection yourself. And, Mike, it's crazy. If you look at events around the world in the past 10 years, hundreds of thousands of people have died because they didn't know that one thing.
Just, yeah, you feel that shake. You get through the initial initial movement, and then it's go time.
Yeah.
Now, you're saying 10 minutes. That's a lot. You know, I've spoken with Lori Dangler up at HSU Geology. I've heard numbers as low as 3 minutes.
Yeah, I know. There's definitely some uncertainty, but there's a pretty universal belief that in this region we'll have 10 minutes, which doesn't seem like that much time. But I'll tell you, when you do an evacuation drill for wherever you live and you time how long it takes to get to high ground, most people are sort of startled how quickly they can get to high ground. The one thing we weren't sure about is how long would it take to get from being in bed, for example, to the door. We've done a lot of drills and timing. We've timed a lot of evacuations from the front door, for example. So I finally did a test with my wife, kind of timing me. I was in bed as if I was sleeping to the door. And guess how long it took to get out of bed, fully dressed, in this case, to go to work, and to the door? What would you guess?
I'm going to say, like, in scramble mode?
Yeah.
I would say a good 3 minutes.
I did it like a minute and 15 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And I got fully dressed to go to work, which I probably wouldn't dress like that to go evacuate from a tsunami.
No, you'd be like, shoes, check. Underwear, I know. Maybe.
So,
let's go.
And maybe to leave you with this final point, the idea of being in fear in the tsunami zone, I don't know. We live in a great place, and we don't have drive-by shootings. We don't have carcinogenic air to breathe. There's a lot of upsides, and the tsunami's a downside, but I wouldn't let it get to you. The key to eliminate that fear is to do that evacuation drill with yourself, your family, your community. And I've just noticed over and over that people become way more relaxed about tsunamis when they've proven to themselves that they can walk to high ground in like 4, 5, 6 minutes.
Literally, just last night, I was walking through my house going, that's too heavy and it's too high up. And just like looking at the little things. And it's just like, it was such a calming, it was such a calming thing. And
yeah,
I was
cool.
Talking to people on the street, like, yeah, just get away from the marsh. Like, how hard is that?
I know.
Troy, you have been more than generous with your time on a day that is certainly a busy one for you. I know it's going to be a long night for you guys over at the National Weather Service, putting together all the pieces of today's test and drawing a comprehensive picture. So thank you so much for being so generous with your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Troy Nicolini from the National Weather Service. That is today's Coastal Currents. We will be right back.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search KHUM in iTunes.